She's still, tensed, muscles locked up, straining against me. I continue to lick and lave at her, sucking gently at her clit, knowing precisely how intense that's bound to feel with a monster of an orgasm creeping up on her. In seconds, Silver bears down, her pussy tightening around my fingers just like I wanted it to, and she lets out a high-pitched, wordless scream that echoes around the bedroom. She shudders, trying to bring her knees up to her chest, trying to roll away from me, but I bury my face deeper into her pussy, feasting on her, driving my tongue up inside her until she can't take it anymore, and she's pulling me from between her legs by my hair. Alex? Alex, holy fuck! God, stop! I can't! I relent. Takes a lot of doing, but I manage. I sit back onto my heels, surveying the mess I've made of her, filled with a ruthless pride. She's struggling to breathe, fighting to pull air down into her lungs. Her face is beet red, not to mention her neck and the top of her chest. With her eyes still rolled back into her head, her mouth a little open, her arms and legs splayed haphazardly on the bed, she looks like a girl who just got her ass handed to her by a gold medalist in the orgasm Olympics. Silver. My voice is filled with warning, almost menacing. I can't fucking help it, though. Seeing her like this, I'm hanging on to my self-control by a very frayed thread. Silver opens her eyes, looking at me, her pupils so blown that her irises are nearly gone altogether. More, she whispers. Fuck me, Alex. God, I want you to fuck me so bad. My balls tighten, sending a powerful wave of need chasing up my back. I wasn't planning on holding back, maybe giving her a minute to recover, perhaps, but with statements like that coming out of her mouth, I'm well and truly fucked. I descend on her, taking her in my arms, cradling her in one arm, holding her head off the bed while I support myself with the other. Tell me if it's too much, I warn her through gritted teeth. You say the word and I'll fucking stop. She gasps, her eyes going wide as I slam myself up inside her. Oh my God, she whispers. I fight to hold myself still for a second, to give her a chance to get used to the feeling of me inside her, all the way to the hilt. And it's the hardest thing I've had to do in a very long time. Her pale eyes are locked onto me, staring into my soul in the darkness, and it feels as though one more piece of puzzle is clicking into place. The moments laden with tension, our breath caught in both our throats as we stare at one another. Her fingers lightly trace the side of my face. I love you, she whispers. I love you too, Kara. You're my entire fucking world. The exchange is soft and gentle and sincere. I mean it more than I've ever meant anything in my life. Silver leans up to kiss me, her eyes still open, refusing to break away from mine, and I slowly pull back, sliding out of her. A moment later, I drive myself forward, crushing her to my chest, and she moans into my mouth. Hold me tighter, please. If I hold her any tighter, I'm going to re-break her ribs. I understand what she's feeling, though, because I'm feeling it too. I need to get closer to her. I need us to become one being, one entity, one heart, and one soul. She wraps her legs around my waist and rocks against me, angling her hips up to meet mine, then pulling me back down, asking for even more of me, and my mind goes blank. She feels so fucking good. Holy shit. I go slowly for as long as I can, but soon Silver's scratching at my back and fisting my hair again, sinking her teeth into the top of my shoulder. I hiss through my teeth, reveling in the pain, and I give her what she so desperately needs. I fuck her like my life depends on it, and each time I slam myself into her, thrusting my cock as deep as it will go, Silver peppers my neck and my face with kisses, pleading me for more. When we come together, riding out a long wave of pleasure that seems like it will never end. 24. Alex.
Well, if this isn't a damning picture, I don't know what is.
I wasn't expecting to run into anyone. I was only planning on jogging down the fire escape and grabbing the cable for myself from the Camaro. But when I fling back the apartment door preparing for the cold, Cameron's standing there, his hand raised about to knock. He assesses me, eyes skating up and down my body, plainly unamused by the fact that I'm next to naked and only my thin boxers are covering my junk.
I'm assuming my daughter's in there,
he says stiffly. Yes? Thank fuck I actually put on the boxers. I wasn't going to bother. The parking lot behind the hardware store is obscured from the street and isn't overlooked. I've made the mad dash down to the car naked before, when I've needed to grab something quickly. I only changed my mind because Silver threw my underwear at me and ordered me to cover myself. Cameron's mood is almost as stormy as the night we broke into Weaving's pool house and he pulled out a motherfucking gun. He rubs a hand over his stubble, looking back down over his shoulder at the Parisi's van that's blocking me into my spot.
Get some fucking clothes on and come meet me down by the car, Alex. I need to talk to you.
Should I arm myself? I'm only half joking. Cameron doesn't smile.
Hurry up. It's cold and I have a headache the size of fucking Texas. Tell Silver you're going out to grab some food or something. Chinese. She loves Chinese.
He turns and walks down the metal fire escape, his boots clanging on every step, and it dawns on me that Cameron's about to finally give me the stay the hell away from my daughter speech. What else could he possibly want to talk to me about when he's shown up on my doorstep wearing that murderous expression? Back inside, Silver frowns at me from the bed.
Holy fuck, she looks so damn good lying there, wrapped in nothing but a sheet.
That was quick, she says.
I kick my way into my jeans and snatch up a t-shirt, hurriedly getting dressed. Figured I'd run out and grab some supplies for us since I'm up anyway. You want Chinese? She flops back against the pillows, groaning loudly.
Oh my god, you read my mind. Have I told you how much I love you recently?
Socks go on next. I nearly eat shit as I balance on one leg, trying to shove my foot into one of my sneakers without undoing the laces. Silver laughs at me under her breath. Once the task is accomplished, I kneel on the edge of the bed, kissing her firmly on the mouth.
You haven't told me in at least 5 minutes, I say softly.
She bumps my nose with the end of her own.
Well, I do. Very much, Mr. Moretti. Come back soon. I need your naked body back in this bed.
My dick would be rock hard if she'd said this to me any other time. Cameron's looming presence outside seems to have rendered my cock incapable, though. God damn it, this is gonna suck. I give her another kiss, this time on her forehead, and then I hurry out of the apartment, grabbing a hoodie and pulling it on as I run down the fire escape towards the van. No sooner am I sitting in the passenger seat than my temple is bouncing off the window, pain splintering my skull apart. Stars explode in my darkened vision, lighting up the inside of my head.
You're lucky I'm not more like you,
Cameron snarls.
What the actual...
I hold my hand to my face, staring dumbly down at the flecks of blood that stain my palm when I lower it again. He hit me. Cameron fucking hit me. I gape at him, trying to make sense of what just happened.
Don't look at me like that, Cam hisses. I thought about taking a pair of secateurs to your balls.
What the fuck are secateurs?
Doesn't matter. They're sharp. You wouldn't like them. Put your seatbelt on.
What the fuck? I'm not putting my seatbelt on until I know you haven't actually gone and lost your fucking mind. I'm fizzing with anger. I can't help it. Not that I should have to. Cameron belted me hard enough to ring my fucking bell and then some. It hurt way more than my head smashed into the fucking window, though. My temple feels like someone just took a sledgehammer to it.
If I were more like you, both your legs would already be broken, I'm betting, Cam says.
He tries to pretend that he's just rubbing his hand over the top of his thigh, but the way he's flexing his fingers suggests he probably hurt himself almost as much as he hurt me when he lamped me. "Tell me something." He turned sharply, gunning me down with a vicious glare. "Have you ever killed anyone?"
"What? No. God, can you stop being so fucking crazy for one second? You're not the fucking Godfather."
"Have you been present when that boss of yours has killed someone?"
he asks. "No, of course I haven't, Cam." This is what I'm a second away from saying. I close my mouth on the lie I was about to tell, quickly looking away. Fuck, it hurts to clench down on my jaw, but it's the only thing keeping me from losing my shit right now. Gary was the last man I let hit me like this. When I was young and smaller than him, there was nothing I could do but let him hit me. The moment I was strong enough to retaliate, I threw my punches as hard as I could manage, and I didn't hold back. I was hit plenty of times in juvie, too. Not once did I allow someone to get away with the infraction unpunished. My body wants to launch a counter-strike of epic proportions against the man sitting next to me in the driver's seat. But I can't allow that to happen. He's Silver's father. I like him more than I thought possible, and... well, he kind of owed me a jaw-rattler. I've hardly been subtle when it's come to Silver. I've disrespected his home, and him in turn, with some of the shit I've done to his daughter, under his roof. I don't blame him for wanting to tan my hide. Fuck, I totally deserve a beating, I guess. That doesn't stop the fire in my veins from demanding I grab him by his fucking throat and choke him out until he stops breathing. I don't work for Monty anymore. I grit the words out between my teeth, the coppery tang of blood coating my tongue. I quit working at the Rock. I'm not going to be around that kind of shit anymore.
Oh yeah?
Cam doesn't sound convinced. Sounds like he thinks I'm fucking stupid.
And your pal Monty just waved a hand in the air and said, "Cool, see you around, man. Nice knowing you." Is that what happened?
He wasn't even slightly concerned that the guy who's been cleaning up his messes for him the past God knows how long just doesn't feel like doing it anymore. I don't say anything. I'm not accustomed to being spoken to like this, not even by Monty. Cam hisses angrily under his breath. He turns the key in the ignition, and the van grumbles to life. He reverses back out of the tiny parking lot way too fast, not even bothering to pause and check for oncoming traffic before he veers out onto the road. He drives down Main Street, muttering furiously to himself. It's not until we're pulling into Raleigh High's parking lot and he's cutting the engine again that he quits muttering and speaks to me properly.
"I wanted to be the cool dad, you know. I was doing all kinds of shit when I was Silver's age, so I figured fuck it. Better that I know what she's up to. Better that I know where she is and who she's with. I've never once judged you, Alex. Most fathers in my position would have shot fucking first and asked questions later, but I gave you the benefit of the doubt. I thought, Cam, it's gonna be fine. They're just kids figuring out their shit."
God, you're making it sound like I knocked Silver up and fled the state, Cameron. I love her. You know I love her. You knew we were having sex. I say awkwardly, tripping over the last two words.
"She's not just some..." "Of course I knew you were having sex," he roars.
Stunned, I immediately shut the fuck up. He smashes his fist into the steering wheel, and the van's horn lets out a surprised meep that sounds patently fucking ridiculous.
"I didn't care about that," he says,
panting a little too fast.
"I wasn't fucking thrilled about it. Don't get me wrong, no father's stoked to know that their only daughter's no longer a... never mind, the sex thing, whatever. But you did something far worse tonight, Alessandro Moretti."
My head's spinning. Throwing my hands in the air, I try to figure out what his deal is, but he's making it fucking impossible. "Cameron, I don't know what you think I've done, but
do you think I'm stupid?"
he asks, shaking his head angrily.
"Is it the glasses? Do they make it seem as though I can't fucking see, Alex? 'Cause I hate to break it to you, but that's what they're there for. They make things pretty damn crystal clear, even from across an average-sized diner."
He pauses, takes a slow, tense breath, and then he lands a blow that rocks me way harder than his right hook. You asked my 17-year-old daughter to marry you, didn't you, you little fuck?
How? How can you know that? No way Silver would have told him. She made me promise to come with her to break the news. She hadn't left my side since we fled the diner. I stare at him, trying to figure out how any of this has come to pass. Out of nowhere, Cameron's anger disintegrates. He sags back into his seat, letting his arms fall to his sides.
A silence like that's gonna betray you every time, he murmurs. Doesn't matter, though. Not really. See, I know my daughter, and I know what it feels like to love someone the way she loves you. I can see it in her eyes, the way she looked at you after you whispered in her ear.
Again, he shakes his head. He can't seem to stop repeating the motion.
I knew what you'd done the second I saw that look on her face.
A sour, bitter knife twists in my chest. I should have seen this coming a mile away. What? So it's one thing letting your daughter date the bad boy for a little while when she's young and wild, but another thing entirely letting her saddle herself with him for the rest of her life? I wait for his confirmation. It's obvious, for fuck's sake. He's been tolerating me since I rolled up on my bike, and now he's done playing at the cool dad, as he so eloquently put it. He's going to put his foot down, and he's going to try and take her away from me. And the very worst part is that there's nothing I can do about it. I won't come between Silver and her father. I won't do it. It would be the most selfish thing I've done. Cameron heaves out a heavy, dejected sigh. For a moment he says nothing, gazing blankly out of the windshield, but then he rubs his hands over his face and speaks.
Do you really think I see things so black and white? This has nothing to do with you, asshole. This is about her.
Well, that's a surprise. I chew on that for a beat, trying to level out my frustration. You don't think I'll make her happy? He laughs, frustrated.
I'm sure you will. But this isn't the life I envisioned for her, Alex. Married at 17? You say you're too smart now, but trust me, you'll end up with kids before you know it. Before either of you really know how the hell to be adults yourselves, and that'll be it. She'll end up getting a practical qualification at night school because it'll help her get a steady, reliable job. And you'll do your best too. I know you will. But fuck.
He trails off, closing his eyes, and the flash of pain that crosses his features stuns the shit out of me.
It makes for a small life, Alex. Making do. Getting by. Doing just enough. I want so much more for her than that. She deserves the biggest life imaginable. She's supposed to be an astronaut or a fucking explorer in the Amazon, not a goddamn admin worker.
Inhaling a steady breath, I cross my arms, letting my chin rest on my chest. I want her to fly, Cam. I'm never going to clip her wings. Being married... Shit. Why is it so hard to say out loud to him? Won't mean she can't chase down her dreams. I'm never going to stand in the way of the things she wants.
Easy to say. But 20 years down the line, when you're both turning 40 and all you've done is get by, then what? Are you gonna do something stupid and have a fucking affair? What then? Oh, damn. This isn't about Silver and me.
Scratch that, I suppose it is about us, but it's more about Cam. He married Silver's mom right out of high school. They were kids themselves when they had Silver. He told me himself, back when I lived in the trailer, that he'd packed his bags and nearly moved across the country the very same day she was born. But he'd stayed in the end. They'd been happy, and after it all, Silver's mom had destroyed their marriage by sleeping with another man. She'd grown bored of her safe, comfortable, predictable life, and she'd done something that had hurt Cameron in the worst way possible. From his point of view, it's happening all over again. Only this time, it's Silver giving up her freedom too soon and too young. It's Silver who will be hurt down the line when I grow frustrated with our safe, comfortable, predictable life. And now he can't bear to watch. So he did something about it instead. He got me in his car, punched me in the face, and now he's holding me hostage at the school for some reason. Cam, come on. I'm not going to do that to Silver ever.
You're 17, Alex. You don't know what you're going to do next year, let alone in 20. Fuck him for that. I don't like hearing the accusation or the condemnation in his voice, but losing it at him isn't going to prove anything. Instead, I managed to keep a cool head. You're right. I don't know what I'm going to do next year. I don't know if I'll go to college, or if I'm going to get a job, or... I don't know. But what I'm certain of is Silver. If she goes off to Dartmouth, I'll be sitting in the car right next to her with all my shit packed up too. She wants to disappear off into the Amazon? I'll take my malaria pills like a good boy and make sure she doesn't get eaten. And shit, if she decides she wants to be a fucking astronaut and go into space, I'll figure that out too somehow. Whatever direction she decides to head in, and for as long as she wants me by her side, I'll be there, taking every step with her. And our life won't be safe or comfortable anyway. She's full of music and laughter and light, Cam. How can anything ever be predictable with Silver around? Inside the school, a light goes on in the main hallway. Cameron clenches the van keys in his fist, loosening his grip and then tightening it again. We both sit for a while, staring at the rectangle of light coming from inside the school, cutting through the dark. And I wait for him to say something. It takes a long, long time. Finally, he reaches into the inside pocket of his jacket and pulls something out. He turns it over in his hands, the small maroon box with the gold fleur-de-lis embossed in gold on the top, and then puffs out his cheeks, slapping it into my chest. "What's this?" I ask, even though I know precisely what it is. The box feels like a burning hot coal in my hands. "It was my grandmother's. I can afford to get her a ring, you know. I have plenty." Yeah, I'm sure you do," Cam interjects grumpily. "But this was supposed to go to Silver when she got engaged. It's special. During the war, my grandfather helped to pass messages through the Dolomites to the Allied forces. He bought that ring in Switzerland, and he carried it with him for 3 years until he could get it back to my grandmother. It has a good story. There's a happy ending attached to it. It's the kind of ring that should be worn, better than some soulless new piece of jewelry from Zales." I have better taste than Zales. It's offensive that he'd even suggest such a thing. I may be a guy, and I may have neck tattoos and look like I could give a shit about women's jewelry, but I'd never walk into a chain store and buy a generic ring for the woman I wanted to marry. I would have bought Silver something that reflected her. Something unique and one of a kind. When I opened the box that Cameron thrust at me, the ring inside is exactly that. The stone isn't a diamond. It's a blushed color of pink, clear and bright, and it catches what little light there is in the van, refracting it beautifully. The design isn't as traditional as I thought it was going to be. It's feminine and truly special, but... "The setting's silver?" Cam grunts. "There was a war on. Precious metals and stones were rationed just like everything else. Even in Switzerland, my mother asked if she could get it remounted for my grandmother back in the 70s, but that idea went down like the Hindenburg. My grandmother turned to her and said..." Cam turns to me, echoing the woman's words. "This is the ring I said yes to. I wouldn't change it for the world. As far as I'm concerned, silver is far more precious than gold." Huh. Too apt to be a coincidence. Silver's an uncommon name for a person. I get the feeling that a little piece of her great-grandmother's story was passed down to Cam's daughter when she was gifted with that name. I nod, snapping the box closed. Silver is far more precious than gold. "You're not going to try and stop us then?" It could be the recent head injury, but I'm completely confused. Cam laughs down his nose, one doleful, resigned huff of breath. "You're never gonna hurt her. You're never gonna cause her pain. Not even for a minute." These are statements, not questions. Still, I respond as though they are. I'd rather fucking die. "Then no, I'm not gonna try and stop you. What would be the point? It's too late for any of that. I swore I'd always give Silver the life she wanted, and she's made her decision. She's chosen a life with you, and at the end of the day, a song can't be unsung, can it, Alessandro?
I grimace down at the box, a little twisted up inside over the sound of that name coming out of his mouth. He's done it to rile me up a little. He knows only Silver can call me Alice.
Alex.
It's fine, I don't care. You can call me whatever you...
No, Alex!
He hits me in the top of my arm and a low growl builds deep in the barrel of my chest.
I swear, man, that was your last free shot. If you hit me again, I'm gonna fucking...
He grabs me by the arm and shakes me.
Shut the fuck up, look!
Shocked by the urgency of his tone, I look up as commanded, following his wide-eyed gaze out of the windshield back toward the school. The light's still on in the hall like it was before, but now there are three people standing on the steps that lead up to the main entrance, the figures of three men. I lean forward, squinting into the dark. The identities of the three men become apparent all at once, and a cold, vile sensation descends on me.
What in the holy fucking shit is this?
Can I borrow your glasses? A deep, throaty rumble fills the car. In the driver's seat, Cameron growls like a feral dog that's just cornered in a cage.
They're broken, he replies. They have to be, because I cannot be seeing this right. That's Principal Darhauer and that motherfucker from the DEA, and that, Cam says, choking on the words, is someone who should not be breathing free fucking air.
25. Silver. Orange chicken doesn't even take an hour and a half to cook from scratch at home. I know from many, many experiences, no, I am not proud of myself, that it takes less than 20 minutes to order, wait for, and collect said dish from the Imperial Dragon over by the post office. So I begin to get a little worried. I try to call Alex, but his phone's sitting dead on his bedside table. He was going out to get his charger when he suddenly came back into the apartment talking about supplies and Chinese food, and then he left without even plugging it in to power up. I'm getting ready to call over at the diner. Maybe Alex went there to pick up the guitars and all of the gear we just left sitting there after our performance, when he creeps in through the apartment door like a criminal trying to sneak past a guard dog. From the kitchen, I peer out into the hall, folding my arms across my chest. Alex, what are you doing?
Filio di puttana.
He puts a hand out, bracing himself against the wall. His dark, wavy hair looks like he's run his hands through it 1,000 times, and his eyes are... Wait. Alex, why the hell do you have a black eye? I rush toward him, reaching up for the swollen, bruised contusion on the side of his cheekbone. Oh my God, your eyebrows split open. What the hell happened? Less than 2 hours. He's been gone less than 2 hours, and he still manages to find trouble. He grimaces when I touch my fingertips to the cut just above his left eye, sucking in a sharp breath.
Well, the black eye's courtesy of your dad.
I can't have heard him right. What? My dad?
Turns out he's really fucking good at putting two and two together. Did you know that about him?
I spent most of my childhood trying to pull the wool over his eyes unsuccessfully. Yeah, I know that. What are you talking about?
He knew I asked you to marry me, and he wasn't very happy about it.
I step back, covering my mouth with both hands. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Quickly looking him up and down, I scan for any other injuries. If Dad figured out what we did tonight, then he wouldn't have left it at a black eye. He would have gone for castration, no doubt about it. Are you okay?
I'm good.
Then... what's with the sneaking in, and what's with the weird look on your face? He really does look weird, like he's holding a swarm of bees inside his mouth, and they're stinging him repeatedly, but he can't let them out.
I thought maybe you were asleep. I didn't want to wake you.
It's 9:30, and you promised me Chinese food. Why the hell would I be asleep? Alex? Hey, what's going on? What is it? What aren't you telling me? The look on his face is really beginning to freak me out now. He was smiling when he left the apartment, but now he looks like the world went ahead and ended on him. My nerves are shot to hell when he reaches out and takes hold of my hand, guiding me into the bedroom. Alex?
Sit down, Argento.
Why? God, just spit it out. I'm about to have a goddamn nervous breakdown.
Just sit down a second. I need to think.
He looks like his nerves are fried. Pacing up and down the bedroom, he chews on his thumbnail, breathing heavily. I sit on the bed, pulling my legs out of the way of the path he's wearing into the area rug, tucking my knees under my chin. The waiting is fucking killing me, but rushing him isn't an option. Following him with my eyes from one side of the room to the other, my mind races. Something's happened. Something terrible. I can't figure out what, though. Sadly, the worst things that could ever happen to Alex actually did happen recently. His brother fucking died. He can't be trying to brainstorm a way to break up with me. He only asked me to marry him 4 hours ago. Hopefully it's going to take a lot longer than that for him to get sick of me. Which means this can't be about him. So that means... oh, it must be about me. A sharp pain begins to throb behind my right eye, forewarning of an epic headache. For Alex to be this wound up, whatever this is about, has got to be bad. Is it Dad? I ask quietly. You were just with him. Is he hurt or something? Sick? Alex shakes his head, eyes briefly meeting mine before he looks away again.
No, Cam's fine. Well, he's pretty worked up, but...
About us? Getting married?
No, Christ.
He stops abruptly, dropping into a crouch in front of me at the end of the bed. His hands are like ice when he reaches out for me and threads his fingers through mine. He's wearing that look that people get when they know they're about to say something that's going to shatter someone's world into pieces.
Cam's upset because he drove me to the school. He wanted to talk. When we were done, we realized there were people standing on the steps outside.
Okay. Sometimes they have teacher training after the students leave, right? Or a janitorial crew might have been...
It was Darhauer, Alex says, cutting in. That DEA prick was with them. And so was...
He blows out hard. If you don't spit it out, I'm gonna scream. For real. I can't take it anymore.
Jacob.
His voice cracks on the name.
Jacob was with them.
I blink, and then I blink again. Alex is out of focus. My vision sways and warps like someone just dosed me with acid. I'm sorry. Did you just say Jacob was outside the school? Jacob Weaving? Alex nods, worry pulsing off him in waves.
I had to wrestle your dad back into the car and drive him home. That's why I was gone so long.
Dad got out of the car?
Yeah. I think he would have tried to kill him if I hadn't grabbed him first.
Everything is so muffled, like wads of cotton wool are blocking my ear canals. I can't quite seem to understand. Frowning, I narrow my eyes at Alex. That's not possible, though. Jacob's in prison. They took him away. They have so much evidence, your witness statement, the photos of Zen, all of the charges they slapped him with for helping his dad. It can't have been him. It must have been someone else. Alex winces.
Cam made a couple of calls as I drove him back to your place. Sheriff Hainsworth said he couldn't discuss the matter, but one of his deputies called back a couple of minutes later. She heard the sheriff and said it wasn't right, what was happening, and that we, that you, deserved to know what was going on. Apparently.
Alex looks off to the left, staring, his mouth slightly open, as if he doesn't really know how to proceed.
Apparently the DEA are dropping the charges against Jake. His dad cut a deal with that Lowell fucker and said he'd give them the names of 5 big drug smugglers if they lessened his sentence. Jake won't be held responsible for anything he did while working for Caleb. The rape charges still stand, but they've let him out on bail until his hearing.
Unwittingly, my hand moves to the base of my neck. Fuck, the rope is still there, tightening around my throat, cutting off my air supply. What about the attempted murder charge? Alex lets out a tight, scathing sound.
Dropped. They've replaced it with an assault charge instead, which is absolute fucking bullshit. Your dad thinks that they lowered that charge as part of Caleb's deal with the DEA as well.
I hug my knees even tighter, staring at the floor. So, that's it? They just let him out?
Alex huffs, his head hanging low. Yes.
And if he was at the school, then what does that mean? They're just gonna let him come back? Like nothing fucking happened?
I don't know. Darhauer yelled across the parking lot, but I didn't exactly get a chance to stop and speak to him. I was too busy trying to get your dad to calm his shit.
I can't imagine that, I say numbly. You trying to calm him down. I'd have thought it'd be the other way around.
Believe me, Argento. I wanted to peel the bastard's fucking face off the moment I laid eyes on him. Darhauer and Lowell were there, though. It would have been a one-way ticket to jail for me if I'd even spat in their direction. They can't watch over him 24/7, though. He'll find himself alone at some point. And when he does, I'll be ready and fucking waiting for him.
This is so bad. Alex's rage is unparalleled. He's simmering with it. It won't take much for him to bubble over. We've been through this already. If he hurts Jake, it'll be the end of the line for him. And he won't just hurt him this time. He'll kill him. And then what? I only get to see him a couple of hours a week for the next 30 fucking years? He'll be 50 by the time he's released from prison. The best years of our life together gone. Jacob will still have fucking won. I'm not stupid enough to tell Alex not to hunt him down, though. It'd be a waste of breath. He saw me hanging from that rafter with a rope around my neck, and I saw the fear and the pain on his face when he thought he was going to lose me. Jacob has to pay for what he did, and Alex won't rest until he sees it come to pass. But there has to be another way. Slowly getting to my feet, I sniff, surprised to discover that I'm crying.
Silver, Alex whispers.
I step around him, picking up my bag from the floor by his bedroom door. Inside, I hunt down the small card, still tucked into the zipped interior pocket. It's a bit rumpled and dog-eared on one corner, but the number's still perfectly legible. I hand it over to Alex, knowing that I'm handing over a piece of my soul with it. A piece I will gladly sacrifice if it means that Jake finally gets his just desserts. Alex scans the card with quick, assessing eyes.
What's this?
The doctor who treated me. I think her boyfriend might be the kind of guy you pay to make people disappear.
The words don't sound real coming out of my mouth. They sound like something someone else would say, reading off a script in some kind of movie.
Things like this don't get spoken about in real fucking life. I barely feel any connection to the statement at all. Instead, crazed laughter bubbles up the back of my throat, spilling out of me in bursts like deranged hiccups.
Alex frowns at the card. A hitman? You think your doctor's boyfriend is a hitman?
Yeah, he had a weird name. Zeus or Zane or... His head snaps up.
Zeth? The guy who gave this to you was called Zeth?
Yeah, that was his name. Shaking his head, Alex stares at me incredulously.
No fucking way.
26. Silver.
For the 1500th time, this isn't up for discussion.
Dad's on the warpath. He hasn't stopped ranting about injustice and corruption since I woke up this morning. He nearly mowed down an old woman on the driveway over to Raleigh because he was gesticulating too wildly and didn't notice her step out into the road.
I'm not gonna stand by and allow that boy to come back to school, Silver. No, no fucking way. Their position's utterly untenable. Well, I have no idea what their position could possibly actually be, but it isn't going to fly. If Jim Darhauer wants to bow and scrape to a family in disgrace, then he's gonna have me to contend with. Not to mention the rest of the parents when they find out that the principal of the fucking school is okay with a fucking rapist murderer rubbing shoulders with their kids.
Jake didn't actually kill anyone, I mumble under my breath.
We don't know that. How are we supposed to know that? Dad screeches. For all we know, Jake's murdered a bunch of people and his sycophant parents covered it all up. Man, it makes me fucking sick that Caleb Weaving can still wield this kind of power from behind prison bars.
He smashes the heel of his hand into the steering wheel, baring his teeth.
It isn't fucking right!
Suffice it to say, I didn't want him to drive me to school this morning. I didn't want him anywhere near this disaster of a situation, but there was no talking him down. He swore he was going to keep a calm head, but he'd broken that promise before he even hit the end of the driveway. You're cursing too much, I tell him. Darhauer isn't even going to agree to see you, you know that, right? You're supposed to make an appointment. And you look insane, Dad. He's gonna take one look at you and be afraid for his life. Dad does look terrifying. His hair is standing on end, his glasses propped at a weird angle on his face, and there are dark circles under his eyes. He didn't go to bed last night. He was still waiting up for me when I came in just before midnight, and he refused to sleep. He prowled around the house, banging cupboard doors, slamming around in the kitchen, generally being a pain in the ass. And when I came downstairs at 7:30 this morning, he was ready and waiting for me at the door with the Novus keys in his hand, blue murder written all over his face. His expression has only worsened on the drive across town. "He's gonna see me," he grits out, swinging the car into the school parking lot. "And he better not tell me that that little fuckboy is gonna be allowed to come back and attend classes, or I will burn the place to the fucking ground. So help me God, I'll do it." "I understand your concern, truly I do. Now I know this situation isn't perfect, Mr. Parisi, but we have to face facts. Raleigh High is the only school within 30 mi- Perched on the very edge of his seat, my dad cocks his head to one side, leaning in closer to Darhauer. The principal doesn't know my father as well as I do. He doesn't know that my old man is about to go nuclear. "Let me just lay this out for you, Jim, so you can see it from an impartial perspective, because I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt here. I'm sure the only reason you're even considering this ridiculous course of action is because you're way too close to this. A student at this school has raped not one, but two girls that we know of. He broke into my house and kidnapped my daughter. He then brought her here to this school where you have been tasked with ensuring the safety of our children, and he brutally beat her. As if that wasn't bad enough, he then put a fucking noose around her neck and attempted to hang her from the rafters of the school's gymnasium. Government officials charged the same boy." "Those charges have been dropped, Cameron." "I don't give a flying fuck if the charges have been dropped!" I've never seen Dad's face go purple before, not even when Mom told him about the affair. A vein pulses in his temple, fit to burst. I reach over and place a hand on top of his clenched fist, but my plea for him to take it down a notch goes unnoticed. "Government officials charge the same boy with some pretty serious offenses, including, but not limited to, smuggling, coercion, assault and battery, theft. This really isn't helpful. Shut the fuck up, Jim. This piece of shit has broken countless laws and hurt more people than I even know what to do with. Did you know that Zen McReady tried to fucking kill herself, Jim? I know Zen's parents thought it would be best if she took some time to recuperate at a facility. They said her nerves. And what about the pregnancy, huh? Did you know that that poor girl is stuck with a horrendous decision now because one of those assholes actually got her pregnant?" Darhauer's face turns ashen, the color draining from his cheeks. "No," he mutters. "No, I didn't know she was pregnant." "Well, she is. What are you gonna do if she decides, even though she was violated repeatedly by those sick fucking assholes, that she can't face having an abortion on top of everything else? Are you going to expect her to come back to this school too, and make her walk the halls with Jacob Weaving sneering at her swollen belly every time he passes her on the way to class? What the fuck is wrong with you?" "Cam." "No, Jim. If that boy steps foot inside this school, there will be consequences." Darhauer looks at me, a skittish, brief glance that says a lot. He hates that a student's parent is talking to him like this, and he hates that I'm here to witness it. In fairness, I really wish I wasn't. He puffs out his chest, drumming his fingers against his desk. "Threatening me is ill-advised. I'm sure Karen heard that." "So what if she fucking did? Karen's a good person. She's probably drafting up her resignation letter as we speak. I can't imagine for a second that she'd want to continue working here for a man who let something as heinous as this happen on his watch. I'm gonna be frank here. You're gonna call whoever's been charged with watching over that bastard Weaving, and you're gonna tell them to keep him far away from Raleigh High. If you don't, I'm gonna drive myself over to Bellingham, and I'm going to visit every single newspaper and news station I can find. And I'm gonna lay this mess out to them the same way I just laid it out to you. And I'm gonna see what they think of it. And when I'm done in Bellingham, I'm gonna drive to motherfucking Seattle, and I'm gonna do the exact same thing there. I'm gonna give them your personal address. I'm gonna give them your cell phone number. And then, when I've got everyone good and riled up, I'm gonna remind them of the shooting that took place here not that long ago, and the very stirring speech you gave to my kid about how you were gonna do fucking better." Principal Darhauer is visibly shaking as he rocks back in his chair. "To what end, Cameron? What good would any of that do? Stirring up painful memories is only going to hurt—" "I don't care who it hurts," my father hisses.
I care about my daughter and the shit that she's been through. Now you make that call right the fuck now while I'm sitting here in front of you, or I swear on all I hold dear, I am quickly gonna become your worst fucking nightmare.
27. Alex. Muffled chatter leaks into the hallway, spilling out from the gaps underneath the classroom doors as teachers mark off their students one by one. I should be in my own homeroom, grunting out a response when my name is called out, but my perfect attendance record is irrelevant now. Maeve and Rhonda might leave a voicemail griping about my decline in fucks given, but frankly, I couldn't care less. I have an itch that needs to be scratched, and it isn't the kind of itch that'll just go away on its own. Left unchecked, this itch will turn into a full-blown obsession, liable to cause some serious trouble. From around the corner, footsteps, quick and urgent, echo off the walls, growing closer. I take a step back into the recessed doorway to the men's bathrooms, willing the shadows to hide me. It's only that Mr. French is heavily distracted when he comes into view, lasering in on the door opposite me, that he doesn't notice me lurking in wait. He raps briefly on the classroom door, but doesn't wait before steamrolling in. I get a brief snapshot of students sitting at their desks, faces turned up to Mr. French, as his hushed voice disturbs their morning ritual.
Ah, Ms. Jarvis, sorry for the interruption. I need to see Jacob Weaving.
The door closes, blocking my view of the intrigued faces beyond and stealing away the sound. I bounce on the balls of my feet, impatience running rife in my veins. Any second now? Any second?
This can't do this! Fucking bullshit!
Only half of Jake's outraged shout is audible through the classroom door, but I get the gist of it. He's making a scene. I paint the mental picture, Jake sitting behind his desk, oozing swagger, smug as the obnoxious prick he is, planning out how best to taunt the girl I love with his presence. Then Jake's suspicious, wondering why he's being beckoned out of the class already when the day hasn't even started. Jake asking questions, demanding answers, and now losing his fucking mind when that poor bastard French tries to manage him.
No! I'm not anywhere. I is my right. The cops? Sorry you ever. Hands off me, you.
I smirk into the collar of my leather jacket, like the sick motherfucker I am. Inside the classroom, there's a scraping of chairs and a stifled shout. Loud clattering follows, and the sound of Mr. Jarvis's shrill voice rising into a startled yelp. A second later, the classroom door opens, and a confusion of sound and movement pours out. Jake stumbles. Did French just push him? My God, has he been a secret badass this whole time? Catching hold of the door jamb for balance, his bag skates along the ground in front of him, and comes to a stop right at my feet. Jake's eyes travel from my Stan Smiths all the way up my legs, my stomach, my chest, until they reach my face, and a look of abject hatred twists his features.
What the fuck are you looking at?
He snarls, snatching his bag up from the floor. Yep, nothing's changed. He's still the same arrogant cunt he was before he got locked away. You'd think becoming intimately acquainted with the inside of a jail cell would have humbled him a little. Some guys rot in that environment, though. The vilest things about them, their anger, their prejudice, their vitriol, fester in the dark. And when they step out into the light again, they have become the very worst possible versions of themselves. I didn't think Jake could get any worse. But seems as though I was wrong. Looks like you lost some muscle, Jake. Most people pack it on in prison. I can't help it. It's in my nature to want to destroy this evil cocksucker. I want to take hold of something serious and sharp and drive it up underneath his ribs until I hear his breath turn wet and crackling. I want him to experience a paralyzing level of pain that will make him beg for death. A verbal jab won't come anywhere close to satiating my need for violence, but unfortunately it's going to have to do. An ugly sneer contorts Jake's face.
Getting shot'll have that effect,
he snarls.
I spent weeks in a hospital ward because of you. You're lucky I didn't die. Lucky? I step out of the bathroom doorway, my mouth turning down as I pretend to consider this. I don't stop walking forward until I'm good and right in his face. He smells like laundry soap and expensive fancy cologne. Some ultra-masculine scent that probably has a name like Victory or Warrior. I can still smell the metallic, unpleasant, desperate odor of prison on him, though. It's a smell like no other, and takes a long-ass time to fade. Luck's subjective, I guess. Personally, I would have felt a little luckier if you'd bled out and expired. Moretti? What the hell are you doing out here? Get to class! Mr. French storms out into the hallway, his face a livid shade of red. I almost pity the guy. He wasn't built to handle this kind of situation. He trained to become a teacher, not a glorified bouncer, tasked with dragging wayward teenagers across school grounds. From the looks of him, his grip on this situation's weak at best. I flash a stark, hostile smile at Jake, staring him down, before taking a healthy step back, holding my hands up in the air. Just saying hello to an old friend. You're so fucked, you know that, right? Jake thunders. You don't know when to play it smart. I'm out, Moretti. He holds his hands out, posturing as he looks around, proving his point. I'm out, and I'm not going back. My old man's taking care of everything. There's nothing you or that cunt girlfriend of yours can do. No! Mr. French roars, grabbing Jake by the scruff of his shirt. Absolutely not. No chance. That is not a word I will tolerate. Get moving now. He shoves Jake, who hardly even moves. Baring his teeth at me, he pointedly ignores the teacher. Wait and see, Moretti. Your precious social worker can vouch for you all she wants, but you're on borrowed time. Dad's going after Monty. How long do you think it'll be before that stupid motherfucker turns you over to the feds, huh? They know about the drugs and the guns. They know all about your little midnight deliveries. And who have you got, huh? You think your dad's got enough pull to negotiate a deal for you, asshole? Hell no. I know all about your old man, and he's a fucking dumb dropout loser just like his son. I mean to throw the right hook in my head, but somehow the imagined action fights its way out into reality. My fist connects with a satisfying crunch, and a stunned, laughably hurt expression flickers over Jake's features before he staggers back, tripping over his own feet and landing hard on his ass. The classroom door's still open. Jake looks over his shoulder, his eyes wide with embarrassment, as the students, who have all been watching on, look away, suppressing smiles and whispering to one another. None of his brainwashed football buddies are here. Now, the students sitting at the desks are mostly girls. Once upon a time, they would have had his back. They would have urged him to get up and return the hit. Now they look disdainfully down on the boy they used to worship, and their message is clear. Even I can hear it, silently screamed, as one by one they all avert their eyes. We know what you did. We know what you did. We know what you did. You saw that, Mr. French. You were witness. He attacked me. Jake spits, scrambling to his feet. He turns to the other students. You all did, he rages. My lawyer's gonna want witness statements from all of you. No one says a word. Ms. Jarvis appears in the doorway. She refuses to meet Jacob's furious gaze. She looks to me for a second, and what is that in her eyes? Condemnation? Commiseration? Looks more like gratitude, before she slowly swings the classroom door closed. Fucking bitch! Jake hisses. Enough! Mr. French grabs Jake by the arm, jerking him toward the exit. This is over. Time to go, Jacob. One more word out of your mouth and I'm going to have you forcibly removed. By who? He snorts, ripping his arm free. You really think you can take me? You're pathetic, French. You couldn't fight your way out of a wet paper bag. You're going to tell them what Moretti did to me, or my father's going to sue you for every penny you have. That shit won't work on me, asshole. I'm flat broke. And besides, I doubt your daddy's feeling very litigious. He's got more important things to worry about. Now get the hell out of this school before I call the cops.
Jacob runs both of us through with a viciously sharp glare. You think this is gonna last? Seriously? I'll be back before the end of the week. You'll see. Yeah, you'll fucking see. He charges for the exit, pausing halfway down the hall to pile drive his fist into a locker door, his shout of rage loud enough to wake the dead. More amused than upset, I realize that it's my locker he's just dented, and I begin to laugh quietly under my breath. I mean it, Moretti. Mr. French pants, his shoulders hitching up and down, probably from the adrenaline that's just hit him square in the chest. Go to class. I swear on my dead grandmother's grave, I am so sick of this shit.
28. Silver.
He didn't. I snap off a piece of red vine, digging my fingernail into the red gummy candy. He did. And then he insisted on walking home in a rage instead of just taking my car.
Wow, I can't picture your dad going full psycho like that. He's always seemed so unprovocable, Halliday says, inspecting her split ends. Xander hums, laying down on the back seat of the Nova, sticking his booted feet out of the open window. Gradually, he seems to be surrendering his preppy disguise, and his true colors are bleeding through. He's still sporting a button-down shirt, but his chinos are gone, traded out with semi-smart-looking black jeans. I'm guessing by the end of the week, he's going to be rocking a band tee, and the clean-cut image he's been trying to project will be gone completely.
I can totally see it,
he says, prodding a finger at a small hole in the fabric of the Nova's roof. Don't rip that. I fix a disapproving stare on him in the rearview mirror. He drops his hand to rest on his chest.
I saw how crazy Papa Parisi got when that prick hurt your dog. He lost his shit at the vets. Makes sense that he'd go nuclear on Darhauer at the thought of weaving anywhere near you again.
Halliday dips her head, squinting harder at the spiky ends of her hair. I haven't mentioned her very obvious reactions every time Xander opens his mouth to speak, but it's becoming hard to hold back. She either has a thing for him, or she's terrified of him. One of the two. The wind moans across the parking lot, shaking the stand of trees that lead down to the dell, making their boughs dance. My heart damn near skips out of my chest when I see the dark figure, shoulders hunched up around his ears, jogging toward us across the cracked blacktop. Alex pulls a face when he sees that Halliday has claimed his spot in the passenger seat. He mumbles unhappily under his breath as he wrenches the rear door open, slapping Xander's feet out of the way as he slides into the car. His cheeks are red from the cold, his dark eyes bright, hair a little tousled, and I suddenly resent the fact that there are two other people in this car. I want him all to myself. I want him someplace dark and quiet where I can unwrap him slowly like the gift that he is and savor every tiny, quirky detail of him. He smirks at me, catching the edge of his lower lip between his teeth, and pinpricks of heat tingle across the top of my chest.
Gross, Xander states. If I'd known swooning was on the agenda, I would have brought something to vomit into. Move.
Alex shoves at his legs, trying to push him further over.
If any part of you is touching me by the time I take off my jacket, you're gonna wind up bruised.
Xander rights himself in his seat, sitting up properly.
Oh, we can be matching,
he says, poking a finger at the purple shadow that's rising on Alex's cheekbone.
What happened? Let me guess. You walked into a doorframe?
Quick as lightning, Alex grabs Xander's finger and bends it back, growling.
The fuck's wrong with you? Do you have no sense of self-preservation?
Oh my God. Now I know how my parents felt when I used to brawl with Max on the back seat. Just behave, both of you, or I'm gonna turn the heating off. Xander wrenches his finger free, shaking his hand out, silently mouthing the word, fuck.
Don't worry, Argento. This is how he shows me that he loves me.
Alex thumps him hard, giving him a dead leg.
Only I get to call her that.
I have to take control of this situation now before things get out of hand. Xander, what did you want to talk to us about? I hold up the ratty piece of paper I found in my locker after history, showing him the scrawl of his own handwriting, which reads, group chat, lunch. Muy importante. Xander. I wasn't sure who he'd meant by group, presumably just me, Alex, and himself, but he didn't object to Halliday's presence when he got in the car. Xander snags the note from my hand, tucking it into his jeans pocket as though he's planning on reusing it later.
I heard about the weaving situation last night when I was working at the Rock.
Alex clenches his jaw, turning to look out of the window. The very mention of the Rock is uncomfortable for him.
Monty's pretty pissed at you, man, Xander continues. He wants a sit-down. Things are getting ugly with the dreadnoughts. I'm not sure how long I'll be on task at Raleigh, casing the place for your boss. He isn't my boss anymore.
Don't be such a baby. Just go and talk to him, for fuck's sake. Things aren't as bad as you think they are.
Tension fizzles in the air as Alex twists, turning a cold scowl on Xander.
Is this seriously why you dragged us out here? To try and play peacemaker between me and Monty?
No, that's just a side note. By the way, do with it what you will.
Great, I'll shove it up your ass.
Alex! I thump my head against the headrest, rolling my eyes. Just get on with it, Xander. I'm starving.
All right. Monty was talking to some DEA agent last night. Some smarmy fucker called Lowell.
Alex sits up in his seat like he's been electrocuted. He keeps his mouth shut, though, letting Xander speak.
Monty told Lowell that Jacob wasn't his concern anymore, so long as Caleb went down. He's obviously got some kind of his own deal going on with the feds, but what he said after Lowell left was surprising. He told Casey, one of the Dreadnought boys, that there's an informant in the club. Someone who's been slipping information to the feds for years. Said he finally had proof and there was going to be hell to pay.
Alex frowns.
Informant.
Halliday pivots, twisting around in her seat to face the boys. This piece of information seems to have piqued her interest.
What kind of informant?
A long-standing one, Xander says. I asked Casey about it afterwards, and he said back in the day Monty served 3 years at Washington State for armed robbery. Someone threw him under the bus, cut themselves a deal, and disappeared into thin air. Apparently, Monty's had his suspicions forever, but last night he seemed pretty sure of himself. Now there's going to be some reshuffling at the club because of whatever the DEA told Monty. I hung back at the clubhouse after they closed up for the night, and lo and behold, Q showed up with my dad,
Alex says grimly. He looks askance at Xander.
Right? He showed up there with Jack.
He's resolute, like after all this time the pieces of a complex puzzle are falling into place. Xander nods.
Q knows your dad's been informing. I think he's been supplying him with the information to pass on to the DEA that'll benefit the club, one way or another. He warned Jack that Monty was going to be coming after him for real this time. Your dad said he wasn't going to leave Raleigh with you still in such close proximity to...
Alex lashes out, smashing his fist sideways into the car door. The sudden movement makes Halliday yelp, jumping out of her seat. Alex shakes, wound extremely tight. I think he's going to repeat the action and hit my car again, but he lets out an uneven breath instead, grinding his teeth together as he looks at me.
Sorry, he says. That fucking asshole. You can tell him not to stay here on my account. What does he think's gonna happen? I'm just gonna drop everything and leave Raleigh with him? He's fucking delusional.
Panic grabs me by the shoulders and shakes me. I see it all play out. Alex forgiving his father, life here becoming untenable, Alex showing up on my doorstep in the middle of the night to tell me that he has to go away, that it's for the best, that I'll be better off without him.
Not gonna happen, Silver. He'd never do that to you, and you know it.
The thought is upsetting, though. Life was one long nightmare before I met Alex. Yeah, things have been absolutely crazy since I met him. Tragedy has nipped at our heels, dogging our every turn. But at least he's been there, right by my side. Losing him, well, it doesn't even bear thinking about.
He doesn't just want you to come with him,
Xander says, exhaling as he leans his head against the window next to him.
He wants you to set up a new chapter of the MC with him. Be his vice president.
Alex's reaction is priceless. His mouth drops open, and he lets out a rattle of laughter that bounces around the inside of the car.
No offense, man, he says, but I'd rather choke on a dick than join a motorcycle club. I'm done with old men thinking that they can manipulate and use me for their own ends. My life's my own. I'm not gonna let anyone pull my strings anymore. Especially not fucking Giacomo.
Figured you'd say that.
Why are you even telling us this? Q's gonna be mad as hell when he finds out you spilled club intel.
Xander shrugs, pressing his hands to his chest as he straightens out his already creaseless shirt.
Ah, you know, there have been spurious rumors that I'm a bad friend floating around lately, that I'd knock that one on the head.
A loaded, wordless exchange passes between Xander and Alex.
See, I do have your back. Yeah, all right. You've made your point.
I haven't had any dealings with the Dreadnoughts. However, I've seen a couple of the club's members at the Rock when I've hung out there with Alex, and they don't look like the kind of men you want to cross. Xander could get into very real, serious trouble for telling us what he knows, like kneecaps shot out and fingers cut off kind of trouble. Alex rewards Xander with a grudgingly grateful look.
Thanks, man, he mumbles.
Xander could use this opportunity to be an asshole. It'd be easy to shoot off some attitude after all the grief Alex has given him. He chooses not to. Rather, he gives Alex a perfunctory smile, slapping him on the shoulder.
While we're on topic, there is something else.
What?
Giacomo figured you weren't going to be interested in the role he's picked out for you, so he came up with a plan.
Alex bristles.
What plan?
The most timeless plan there is. You want the guy? Then you go target the girl, right? He's hired someone to go after Silver, and I'll give you 3 guesses who he's picked for the job.
29. Alex. I'm going to fucking kill him. Going after me is one thing, but putting a mark on Silver because he knows he'll never get what he wants any other way? My worthless father's really crossed the line this time. He's going to regret he ever even thought about stepping foot inside Raleigh town limits. I'm going to bide my time. If I go after him, guns blazing, I'll only end up tipping my hand. He'll realize his plan's been leaked and concoct a backup. He'll scramble to regain the upper hand, and that could lead to all kinds of reckless behavior. Back in the car, I thought Xander was going to tell us that my father had hired Jake to pursue Silver. He probably wouldn't have had to pay the psycho to do it, after all. He'd have done it for free. But no, he tapped Xander for the job. In his words, "You can get the closest, my man. Charm her into the parking lot at school or something. Tell her you're a champion cunt eater. Girls pretend that they're all embarrassed when you try to stick your head between their legs, but they love that shit just as much as we love getting our cocks sucked. And I've never turned down an opportunity to get my cock sucked." I nearly knocked Xander's teeth down his throat when he told me that. Wasn't his fault, but the idea of him propositioning my girl made me want to eviscerate him right where he stood. He'd waited until Silver and Halliday had gone to cheer practice before he'd told me that ugly piece of the story, which was good. If he'd disrespected Silver by repeating my father's repellent suggestion, I don't think I would have kept my shit together. Not because I'm worried that she might have been offended. Thanks to Jake's campaign of hate at Raleigh, Silver's heard much worse. No, I would have been ashamed that a man who would say such a thing was actually related to me, and the same blood flows through our veins. If I could drain every last drop from my body and somehow still draw enough breath to protect her, then I'd do it without hesitation. Football practice goes about as well as can be expected. The entire team collude to make me suffer. But they picked the wrong fucking day to pull that shit. I'm just itching to break something. A helmet. A record. A rib or two. By the end of the hour-long debacle, 2 of my teammates, die-hard Jacob Weaving minions, have been benched with injuries that were very satisfying to inflict. I hold the title for most completions in a Raleigh High practice game, and vengeance is still burning hot in my chest. I want to rain down fire and brimstone on Giacomo Moretti's head, and I want to laugh like a madman while I'm doing it. Outside, Xander walks with me to the Camaro and hops into the passenger seat without bothering to ask if he's welcome. My reservations have reservations where he's concerned, but Silver's words of advice have been ringing in my head ever since she said them. You should probably forgive him and move on before you lose him altogether. I would have had a very different experience in juvie if Xander hadn't been around. He showed me the ropes and made the infinitely slow passing of time more bearable. He just took a number of cage-rattling hits that were unquestionably meant for me in that practice game, and there's no doubt about it that as president of the Dreadnoughts MC, Q will do more than kick him out of the club for telling me my father's plan to jump Silver. That incursion will probably land Xander in a shallow grave just off the five if anyone finds out about it. Q's been feeding my father information to pass along to the DEA, which means he's a valuable asset to him. If Xander shared information that in turn compromised the club, then he signed his own death warrant. It doesn't matter how big or small the transgression. Clubs like the Dreadnoughts have a zero-tolerance policy and an equally swift and merciless system for meting out justice. "Where's Silver?" Xander asks, fiddling with the radio dial. I resist the urge to slap his hand out of the way. "Teaching. Guitar lessons." "She's good, huh?" He pulls a Subway footlong out of his bag and opens it, showering the Camaro with crumbs. My vision flashes red, but I bite down hard on my tongue, refusing to gripe about the mess. Xander gives me a wolfish smile, knowing just how badly I want to yell at him. Wordlessly, he offers me half of the sub. "What is it?" "Steak and cheese," I grunt, taking it from him. "I saw you guys play at the diner together," he says, taking a huge bite out of his half. "You were both good." That's surprising. I didn't see him show up at Harry's. Didn't see him sitting at any of the tables or in the booths either. I wasn't exactly paying attention, though. I had other things on my mind. "Thanks," I say stiffly. "You never told me you played when we were in juvie." I shrug, taking a bite of the sandwich, hoping he'll move on and talk about something else. "There was a guitar in the common room. Two of them, actually. Why didn't you ever play them?" he asks. I chew, and I chew, and I chew. Eventually, I have to swallow, and Xander's still sitting there waiting for an answer. Fucker. I struggle for a moment to figure out how best to explain, shuttling the St. Christopher around my neck up and down on its chain. "Music's personal, man. To me, anyway. If I'd picked up one of those guitars in that place, I would have sullied it. I wasn't myself in there. I wanted to leave that part of me outside of the gates, and music makes me feel free. Playing it in there would have made me feel even more trapped than I already was." I wait for the mockery. This is an easy opportunity for him. I basically just handed him my ass on a silver platter, just begging for him to ridicule me for being a little bitch. Xander does nothing but nod, intently studying his steak and cheese sub. "I get it. Makes sense. You've got a talent, though, dude. You should definitely share it more often, now that you are free and all." Compliments about my playing have always made me break out in hives. I smash the rest of the sandwich, occupying myself with the act of eating. When I'm done, I start the engine and I say no more about my musical abilities. "Whole Lotta Love" by Led Zeppelin comes on the radio, and Xander turns it up as we pull out of the school parking lot. "Where are we headed?" he asks. I get the impression that our destination doesn't really matter to Xander. He's just content to be moving. "The Rock," I tell him in a clipped voice. It really is about time I paid Monty a visit.
30. Silver. I still get paid if a kid's parents cancel a lesson. When I arrive at Gregory and Lou's place, Dr. Coombs hands me three $20 bills, folded in half, and informs me that both the boys have come down with a stomach bug. I try to give him his money back, though. Honestly, I wouldn't charge him for the boys' lessons at all if I could get away with it. I'm racked with guilt every time I teach them, knowing what I know. Their mother was fleeing my mom's workplace after seeing mom half naked with her legs spread on her boss's desk when she careened through that intersection and was smoked by another vehicle. If she hadn't seen her friend so flagrantly cheating on her husband, she wouldn't have been driving that recklessly. She'd probably still be alive. By extension, I feel somehow responsible for Gail Coombs's death.
"No, I respect your time, Silver," Dr. Coombs says. "You set aside an hour to teach a lesson, so I'll pay you for it. It's only right."
I object, but it's no good.
He makes it impossible for me to refuse his money, which makes me feel like a fucking monster. I get back in the car with a sinking, oily, unpleasant feeling swirling around in my stomach. Halfway home, I notice that I'm being followed. Dread begins to churn like a piston below my ribs. Way too close, riding my tail, the truck is black and gleaming, its windows tinted out, making it impossible to see who's behind the steering wheel. The vehicle's expensive. Must have cost a pretty penny. I only know of one family who'd be able to afford a truck like that. Caleb Weaving's assets were all frozen when he was arrested, but it sounds like he's been negotiating all kinds of bullshit agreements with the powers that be. If he could swing getting Jake released after everything he did, then it stands to reason that he could also arrange for at least some of his vast fortune be made available to his wife and son. You've got to be kidding me. There's no one in the Nova to hear me, but it had to be said. Technically, Jake isn't breaking any laws by following me across town, but the way he shadows me, moving from lane to lane, taking every turn I take, is an intimidation tactic for sure. My heart jackrabbits in my chest as I reach for my phone and pull up Alex's number. By the sixth ring, I realize that he isn't going to pick up. Shaking all over, I call Dad instead.
Hey, kiddo, what's up? Thought you were teaching the Coombs boys.
God, he's only just calmed down after he found out Jake had been released. This is gonna send him flying off the handle again. I'm being followed, Dad. I think it's Jake. Dad's voice is as icy as the seventh level of hell.
Where are you?
On Court Avenue, about to cross, Lederman.
You're close to the hospital. Go straight there, Silver. Run every red light if you have to. I'm leaving the house right now. I'll meet you there. Stay on the phone, kiddo.
Okay. I'm still trying to tell myself that I might be overreacting as I take a left and gun the Nova's engine, speeding in the direction of the hospital. The truck takes the same left, speeding up, inching dangerously close though, bursting that idea like a bubble. He's going to run you off the road. He couldn't break you when he fucked you. He didn't break you when he tried to hang you. Now he's going to force you into a ditch in the rain, and Alex is going to lose you in the exact same way he lost Ben, and... God, stop! Just fucking stop! I silence the panicked voice in my head, forcing it to be silent. I need to think. The hospital's still 3 or 4 miles away. Between here and there, there isn't much of anything. Just one long, winding stretch of road bracketed by tall trees. The occasional house set back from the road. There's nowhere for me to go but straight. Behind me, the truck's engine roars, and the vehicle surges forward like a leashed dog pulling at its chain. Fuck, 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 fuck. Where the hell is Alex? Where the hell is he? The skies are clear now, but it rained all morning. The temperature plummeted at some point this afternoon, and now the roads are slick with ice. I come heart-stoppingly close to skidding off the road when I take a corner a little too quickly. The car coasts, swinging wildly through the turn, and for one horrible moment, the brakes do absolutely nothing. This is it. This is it. This is when I fucking die. The truck's horn blares out like some sort of warped victory cry. Only, the Nova's wheels gain traction, biting into the blacktop, finding purchase, and suddenly I'm tearing forward again. Focus. Drive. Just fucking drive. You've got this. You can do it. It takes forever to get to the hospital. I pull into the parking lot, drenched in a cold sweat, the Nova's wheels screeching as I burn toward the familiar sight of Dad's silver van. The truck follows after me, right on my tail. I come to a jarring halt next to the van, and Dad climbs out, brandishing a gleaming black weapon in his hands. Holy fuck, Dad! I scream, but he doesn't hear me. He's fixed on the menacing black monster that's barreling right for us. Crack, crack! The sound of the gunshots splinter the air apart. My mouth hanging open, I twist, watching as the truck tears past us, two massive bullet holes blistering the paintwork of the rear passenger door. I'm fear personified as I wait for the truck to come to a stop. But it keeps on going. Rocking wildly as it performs a wide turn, the truck narrowly misses a parked Prius as it peels out of the hospital parking lot, back the way it came. Holy fucking shit. I leaned forward, pressing my chest up against the steering wheel, suddenly incapable of holding myself upright.
Silver, hey,
Open the door, kiddo. It's okay, he's gone.
Dad raps on the window, peering anxiously in at me. It takes a second to wrangle my limbs into some sort of order. They don't seem to want to do as they're told. The moment I've unlocked the door, Dad's there, helping me out of the Nova, pulling me into a bone-crushing hug.
You shot at him, I say breathlessly. You, like, really shot at him.
I know, I know. Come on, come here and sit for a second. You're trembling.
He's still holding the gun in his hand. I feel the coolness of the weapon's unforgiving steel against the back of my neck as Dad guides me to the back of the van, opening up the back door so I can sit on the trunk's ledge.
That motherfucker's pulled his final stunt,
Dad seethes, flustering over me, tucking my hair behind my ears out of my face.
I'm gonna fucking kill him.
Sorry to interrupt, friends.
Dad and I both jump, startled at the voice that speaks behind us. I'm teetering on the brink of a heart attack when I look around, and there, leaning up against the Nova in the bruised purple dusk, is the guy who gave me his business card. Dr. Romero's boyfriend. The guy Alex named Zeth. Oh, fuck. He might not be wearing a suit and a tie, but he looks every inch the mafia kingpin as he coolly assesses us with dark, intelligent, albeit emotionless eyes.
I'm in the market for a weapon, he says airily. That one looks pretty average, but I'm not picky.
Dad stiffens, glancing down at the gun in his hand.
What the hell are you talking about? I'm not giving you my
Zeth pushes away from the car, taking a casual step toward us.
Registered, is it?
Dad's face pales. Oh, Lord, he never registered his gun? Is that thing even his? It looks like the one he used to keep in a shoebox in his closet, but then again, I only really saw it in stolen peeks through the crack.